This week's pod is supported by Manscaped. Manscaped has just launched in the UK. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job, and now you can be one of the first people in England to experience Manscaped's life-changing products. Manscaped is a skin-safe trimmer for below-the-belt shaving. Their 7,000 RPM motor has quiet stroke technology, and I know you fellas like a quiet stroke. So they tell us that Manscaped's technology will make your testes their besties, and you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code NQAT at manscaped.com. That's code NQAT for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com.
The last time we lost 6-1 at Old Trafford, at least we scored the best goal in the game.
You don't think Bruno Fernandes' standard penalty was the best goal?
I mean, it was a good penalty. There is an argument to say that Harry Kane's penalty was even better, given that had Bruno's gone wrong. Not that I don't know why I'm saying that. Bruno's penalties have literally never gone wrong, so he obviously knows what he's doing, but Harry Kane's was unsavable. They're showing the on the TV. I've got the TV on behind the recording here, and we're recording this at 6:40 on Sunday night. They're showing the Martial sending off right now. I just don't know where to start with this game. I mean,
we can go chronologically because it was good for 4 minutes.
It was really funny. The collective Schadenfreude. I guess United fans as a collective got what they deserved for the level of Schadenfreude of getting a 30th second penalty. Worth pointing out that that is probably the shortest gap between penalties, given that we had one in the last second of the previous game.
Given that the last one was like 10 minutes after the end of the game, I think this penalty may have come chronologically before the last one. There's some kind of time vortex has happened here. That's what I'm blaming it on, and not being our players being crap and our manager being a dum-dum.
He's a big dumb dummy. The staggering level of ineptitude on display from Manchester United as a collective, but the back four in particular. I mean, I do think the back four are worthy of particular opprobrium. I'm sure you could heap criticism on the midfield, as people no doubt will and already have. But the level of performance, I mean, Harry Maguire wrestled Luke Shaw off the ball.
Yeah.
By the way, isn't even a joke.
No, it was his best piece of defending all game. Because he actually got close to someone for once. So, I mean, this is dreadful. Yeah, I mean, look, we can start with the back four. I think, did David De Gea make any mistakes? He probably wasn't at fault for any of the goals, was he? For once. I mean, he actually hasn't made a mistake this season, so we should probably go easy on Dave for today, at least. But ahead of them, Wan-Bissaka was probably the best of a really awful bunch, and he just kept giving the ball away. Baye and Maguire were completely and utterly calamitous. Now, Baye, that's his only second start of the season. He's probably unfit. Baye had one of those Baye moments for 90 minutes. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's, you know, some context. It's not an excuse. But Harry Maguire, he's played plenty this season. He should be fit and sharp. I mean, I don't know whether he's still got grease on his mind, but that was awful. He was out of position for the second goal. And then repeatedly after that, Luke Shaw, I mean, I said last week, I don't think he likes football. I'm certain of it. He's just nowhere near. There was one of the goals, and I can't even remember which one it was now. I think it was Son's second goal. Maguire gets attracted out to the right. Luke Shaw's just standing there watching from the left wing. Like, no cover, no nothing. He's just like, can't be bothered. They were all dreadful. And forward of them, Matic just couldn't cope with the movement in midfield, and Pogba couldn't be bothered. I mean, I'm not normally one to lay opprobrium on Paul Pogba, but he quite often sprinted forward and jogged back in this game, quite often. And I think in this kind of game, he had to take a bit more responsibility than that. And it was one of those games where, I mean, you know, I'd have been tempted to hook Bruno even earlier, because in that kind of game, he could offer no value. Like, once it'd been lost, you just want to shut up shop, don't you? And it was just awful all round.
And then the sending off, I mean, at 3-1, I think we were in the game at 3-1. I think, you know, there were moments of quite sort of promising attacking play, and there were periods of pressure and stuff. There were periods of pressure at 2-1, certainly. The sending off changed everything. I mean, it was terrible already. It was, sort of individual performances were absolutely terrible already, but the complete catastrophe begins at the sending. I mean, the catastrophic defending for the first, second and third goal.
Well, the sending off comes after two, right? It's 2-1 at the sending off. Harry Kane's goals a couple of minutes after that.
Okay,
yeah,
right,
which is
sorry,
awful defending.
Bad.
Yes, but it's awful defending for the first. Everyone is asleep for the second. Everyone. Maguire's not watching. He's not even watching.
And that was the quick free
Kane
kick, right?
Free
the snappy
kick.
Free
yeah.
kick. Yeah,
you know, they're just completely asleep. And yeah, and then the sending off. I mean, there's this kind of law in football, L-O-R-E, that says you can't react. So you can do whatever you like, and if the referee lets you get away with it, well, you know, good on you, but you can't react. And it's the softest of softest pats around the chin, isn't it, from Martial? You couldn't even call that, like, dangerous. I mean, he's going to be sent off for dangerous play or serious foul play or whatever it is. And it was
violent conduct.
Violent conduct. Is that violent? I mean, honestly, nope. I'm more violent with my kids, I think. No, I'm not. I'm not. Joe.
Wowie. Ed's like, finally, we're going to get out of the podcast. I'm going to get out of having to do this podcast because Ed's going to be in prison. That's an ironic take, an ironic development. Martial's certainly not going to be sent to prison. I mean, Lamella was. Lamella was as violent to Martial as Martial was to Lamella. Like,
yeah.
Why in an era of video-assisted refereeing are they not either
punished?
Yeah. Why are they not either both or neither sent off? I don't understand. Yeah.
The lesson that Martial has to take out of this is don't react, dive. Because if he'd grabbed his face and fallen over, Lamella would have been punished. And that shouldn't be right with a video referee.
Absolutely not. I mean, there was a stupid handball before that. I mean, a stupid handball decision where Luke Shaw had a free kick given against him when, as Gary Neville said, his body's attached to his midriff there, and which I don't think is exactly what he meant, but his hand was... He said if his hand's not there, it's hitting him square in the belly. I'm not sure what advantage he's taken. Anyway, that conversation can wait for another time. I mean, one of the reasons I'm slightly stumbling over words is I don't know what to say about any of this, because the thing that people want after a result like that, I mean, analysis of the calamitous level of performance aside, is, well, what happens next? How do you recover from that? Where are we as a club? What does all this mean? And, you know, so we haven't talked about this, but we've signed, well, it's not actually done, but we're signing... Sorry.
Paul's lost the running room. Yeah, look, we'll get to transfers, but you said, what does it mean, right? And I think there's two levels. One is, what does it mean in the context of this game and recovering from this game? And that's all on Ollie. The players, of course, have to take responsibility for the truly awful performances. And we haven't finished going through all the goals, by the way, and how awful all of those were. And especially the defensive unit. But Ollie has two as well, and there's two levels for Ollie to think about. One is picking the players up. So after a difficult start to the season, it doesn't get really difficult because there are some really tough games to come. And it's Newcastle after the international break, and then it goes PSG, Chelsea, RB Leipzig, Arsenal, right? And that could be pretty disastrous, couldn't it, heading into the early part of November? I mean, it's not beyond the wit of United to lose all four of those. and Ollie would be in serious trouble.
Almost every time we talk about a scary run of fixtures and how we're going to lose all those games, it turns out to be fine.
And it's true, but that's when United are defending reasonably well, and not right now. So there's that level, right? Ollie has to sort them out. Ollie has to get on the training ground and teach them how to defend, which he's shown no propensity to be able to do, but he has to do that. And then the second level is the sort of meta level, which is where are we going as a club? And a lot of that, and the narrative around the club and the feeling around the club, it does matter what happens on Monday. It really does. Because we saw what happened with Bruno in January. It gave such a big lift to everyone. They went on a, like, 30-match unbeaten run or something. Yeah.
Something like that.
I think I'm probably exaggerating. But it was...
slightly.
You know, they picked up a lot of points. They got Champions League football. They allowed the Glazers to pocket their dividend for this quarter. And then the club seemingly is shafting the manager. So that really does matter Monday. But first, it's Ollie working with the players to turn this around as quick as possible. And they've got the international break now, so don't know whether that's good or bad. Don't know. I mean, at least we haven't got a game on Wednesday, because that could be really bad too. And so he has to do that work, but clearly United are well short of players. It's just today we had our best 11 out, basically, and they got completely annihilated.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to talk about Ole and the defending in particular, because almost the defining quality, so the defining quality at the very beginning of the Solskjaer regime was just Mourinho wasn't there anymore, playing psychological warfare with his players and just make them feel a bit good and get them on a run and allow the horses to run free. And that was beautifully executed. And they played like fearless attacking football and looked really happy. But then after it went wrong, there was a period where we were kind of struggling, but actually defence looked really well organised. Now, last season, the numbers looked great from a defensive perspective, like really great, not just the goals conceded, but the chances conceded, the whole shebang. Any way you look at the data, it looks like United defended well, except actually watching the games, at no point did it look like United defending well.
It doesn't pass the sniff test, but it passes the data test.
Yeah, and I don't think you can say then that the data is correct and your eyes are wrong, because I just don't think that's how it works. I think it's actually limitations in the data set as much as anything else at this point. But this season has been defined by, so far, by poor defensive organisation. And it's not new or surprising. We've just looked really, really, really defensively all over the place. And this is on the coaches and the management's team. I mean, not least of all, they do have options. I mean, at least they picked Bailly, played very well in the game against whoever it was, Brighton. And so he did at least drop Lindelof. I mean, playing Bailly didn't go well, because Bailly was definitely personally responsible for two of the goals that were conceded. But he's kept picking Luke Shaw, who's ironically been forced to give an interview with Sky, which I think is his punishment beating right now. He definitely tried to get himself sent off with that tackle that he got right, put for at the
end,
by the way.
It was hilariously bad, wasn't it? I mean, look, I was joking in the NQAT WhatsApp group that he's playing a league above his actual quality. I mean, it's not quite true, but it's about half a league. He should be nowhere near a top four side. Nowhere near. He's a worse player than when he was 18.
But the kind of collective are as bad as any of the individuals. And that's the bit where it's like, yep, the clubs are complete shambles. Yep, the playing squad's not good enough. But why, dear listener, do they look so shockingly bad at knowing what the other one is likely to do? The teams that look good, I mean, are Leeds' first 11 better than United's first 11? No way, but they all look like they know what each other are doing.
Of course, you know where you're leading with this one. Of course. The fact that we talked about it quite a lot on the pod last season about, you know, United's inability to construct attacking patterns of play. Now, Bruno helped with that, didn't he? Because he was like punting the ball forward constantly, and United suddenly started creating more chances. But organisation and you know, each player, the kind of micro detail that some managers go into about where which player should be in what phase of football, and you can really see it, you know, with some managers. You don't see that with Ollie's team. And, you know, it's very true. And without knowing the ins and outs of what's happening in Carrington, because, you know, we don't have access, and maybe we should fly a drone above there and have a look or something like that. But, you know, without knowing the detail, we're seeing the result, and it doesn't look like he's doing a good job, does it?
No, and I don't know how it's possible that he could be, and this is the consequence of it. Between the kind of like collective confidence, which is brittle as anything. I mean, when Solskjaer got the job, I was incredibly optimistic because I'd always liked the cut of his jib as a manager, basically. He'd always struck me as someone who's
we can talk about his jib, but finish your thought.
But he's just someone who'd always struck me as having a combination of a kind of optimistic outlook, but an edge, and, you know, all these kind of things that you need. And as well, like, he was highly regarded as a coach within Old Trafford, and that's quite a big deal. His Mulder team played pretty lovely football when he first took over. So, you know, and of course it was a joyous fun ride when he first came along. But, you know, that was always hope and, like, confirmation bias. But the reality is, I think he's doing like a pretty terrible job. I mean, now he's talking about, in the post-match interview, he's talking about Lamella and how if it was one of my players, I'd hang him out to dry because he went down so easily and all this stuff. It's like, yeah, right. That's fine. Yeah, the red card was a complete joke, but the team were a chaotic mess before and after the red card. They were a chaotic mess against Brighton. The second string looked better organised than the first. Anyway, I've talked for ages.
Look, they're all fair points. They're all fair points. And we haven't even got to the third goal yet. this is just the intermission between the red card and the third goal. And look, I'm loath to panic analyse this and draw more out of one game than is fair, because I think the period between January and July was mostly pretty good. I mean, performance levels fell off a cliff at the end and they all looked absolutely shattered, but they managed third place, semi-final in the Europa League, a semi-final in something else, the FA Cup.
They got to semi-final in all the cup competitions.
Yeah, exactly, right. So, and you'd say, looking at that squad, that's not bad, right?
No.
Now, of course, being 33 points behind Liverpool, 15 behind Manchester City is a better test, right? That is an awful long way in a 38-game season behind two clubs, and probably a fairer reflection of United's quality. You know, we came into this season with our preview show saying we don't really feel very confident that United are going to finish third again this season, or even possibly in the top four, you know, based on squad quality, right? And then as a par manager, it's Ollie's job to get at least par performances out of this squad, isn't it? You know, if we think they're a fourth or fifth best squad in the league, he has to get that kind of level of performance. And we won't know that until May, sadly, you know. So it's that's why I'm saying I'm a bit loath to panic too much. Although, you know, I'm panicking a fair amount. it's a modicum of panic coming here, but I'm a bit loath to say yes, we should fire him, and a new manager is going to go fix all of this, right? You know, but they're two ends of the continuum, right?
Yeah. Just to be abundantly clear,
and I know
clear,
you're not saying I'm not that saying, either.
Yeah, I'm not saying Woodward should like fire him as he's on his way to get the trophy.
No, I know. I'm just making sure that everyone understands, because it's always a binary conversation on Twitter. It's, you know, it's he's in or he's out, and there's nothing in between, right? So it's definitely somewhere in between. So you know, what do we have as a squad? right? Given Chelsea's spending, Arsenal's spending, Tottenham's spending, it's unclear that we're actually top four quality as a squad. But this was nowhere near top four quality as a performance, and none of the defensive performances have been. Probably even not the one against Luton, which United were quite fortunate to win. Maybe against Brighton.
Although there were those who didn't feel that about that game, weren't there? But the kind of like meta conversation around him. I mean, you saying we were good from January to July. I'd like you to go back and listen to some podcasts that you recorded in March and kind of decide whether you thought we were good for that period. I mean, we were absolutely excellent for, I can't remember how many games, four or five games after the restart. I mean, like, excellent. The best football we've seen since Van Gaal.
You're completely right that January to the end of March, when the lockdown happened, the results were good and the performances were terrible.
Yeah.
And then after the restart, some excellent performances until they fell off a cliff. Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I said last week, I think this is going to be a battle between our, this season's going to be a battle between our good players and our bad players. And like within 30 seconds, it was 1-0 to our good players. And within 7 minutes, it was 2-1 to our bad players. And, you know, that's kind of, that I think is the dichotomy. I do think we should talk about transfers at this point because I think it's relevant in terms of squad depth. So what it looks like, I mean, given that people love transfers so much, we probably could have waited till tomorrow to do this show to kind of confirm. But as what we know right now is that Cavani's done, like that, unless something very weird is going on, that one's done and dusted. And Alex Telles looks like that is now happening, which is very good because it means someone else is going to play a left back. I mean, that's, you know, I have no idea whether he's any good or not, but unless the scouting and data departments have had a really severe collective malfunction, he's got to be better than the guy that's got the job at the moment. So these are exciting signings, but I mean, well, no, that's an exciting signing. The Cavani one, Should we take a little? Do you want to break down all the goals individually? Is that something you actually want to do?
Well, I'm just only for the completeness of talking about this game before.
All right. I'll let you do that, and then we'll take a break and talk about the future.
I tell you what. Let's do this. We'll finish this game, then we can talk about transfers, and then we can talk about how the world's burning.
All right, so tell me about the rest of the goals because I can't remember any of them.
They're that bad, yeah. I can't even remember the third one. It was absolute calamitous defending as the ball came in from the left twice, and Harry Kane was completely free to slot into an open net. Right,
that's right. Yep, classic.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's the one where Shaw is ending up playing at centre back. I'm doing bunny ears. I'm doing quotes if nobody could hear that in my voice. He because Maguire was out to the left and Shaw was playing at centre back. Like just all the lads. And Bailly left a lot of space as well, but anyway.
Yeah, and 4-1 Son again was a couple of simple passes, just completely just knife through butter, wasn't it, in terms of Shaw's defending. It wasn't even that anything particularly fancy, but allowed Son to get through to poke home. I'm sure it was actually going in, was it? It might have been an own goal, really, off Dave's ankle. 5-1 Serge Aurier.
Well, so there's half time and he makes the two subs at that point.
Yeah, and then, you know,
To shore things up,
yeah. I think at half time, United aren't getting back into this with 10 men and trying to press, which is what they did for the fifth goal. A man short, 4-1 down, makes no sense, right? So just go into a low block and just try and defend for the rest of the game, you know, take the L and go home from there, you know, because otherwise it's even more calamitous. I think that was the thinking.
How did it go? Like, did Ole trying to shore United up work, or Did it
totally work? Did for it a 5 minutes?
Or B not work?
Yeah, I Aurier's goal. Can't remember the build.
That was the one that was passed in for, like, where Luke Shaw is for that goal. I can't even remember where he was, but Pogba ends up filling in at left back and he slides it through him. And like Pogba's not covering, neither covered himself in glory nor covered the ball. But where Luke Shaw is just a complete mystery. He's not where he's meant to be, that's for sure.
Yeah. And we had about 28 minutes of not conceding any goals.
United.
Exactly. Until the most obvious penalty, and Harry Kane slammed it home for six. Could have been more after that as well, because Spurs had a couple of chances after that.
It's disgraceful from Pogba as well, that, by the way. Like, it's absolutely appalling. I mean, he had a completely stinking up the joint game.
Well, he's had a few stinking up the joint games. Yeah, and they were fair when he'd had no training and no games. He's had training games now. I mean, I wonder whether it's the Roni has really taken something out of him. Potentially, I mean...
Yeah, maybe, but surely he'd be showing that in training, and that would, you know, I would say I wonder whether the kind of atmosphere around United is taking something out of everyone in a way at the moment. And I wonder whether, like, the atmosphere around the fact that the club seemed to be completely incompetent on transfers particularly affects a player like Pogba, who is clearly, like, desperate to make an impact at a team that are going somewhere and doing something and has just never had that chance at United and is quite clearly never going to have that chance at United.
Yeah, I know. There was talk of a 5-year contract being on the table. He might want to wait. That's six. I said we'd go through the goals and United didn't concede a seventh, but I feel like Son had another chance before he went off, didn't he? But that was before the sixth.
Six was definitely like... Oh, we kind of got away with that in terms of, like, the number of chances that they had. I'm sure they didn't have over 6 XG, but...
No, it's about four.
Which, I mean, that is a huge amount, isn't it? It was 3.3, including the penalty, so a lot lower than you might have imagined. They were pretty clinical, Tottenham, but I wonder if that's some of those are kind of the chances that XG doesn't really capture very well, where it's like shot location and defender position, but actually the really calamitous defending creates bigger opportunities than they might appear just from like the data points. Anyway... That all being said, and United created, of course, absolutely nothing of note at any point.
I mean, the XG map for United is hilarious because it's four tiny little dots and one big one, which is the penalty.
On the penalty spot? Yeah. So for a game in which United got a penalty after the 30th second, I think we can agree that it did not go well.
It did not go well.
Cheers.
It was, in fact, quite poor.
Really just appalling. So let's take a quick break and then talk about something else that's not going well. United's transfer window. If you want more from the show in between shows, check us out on the socials. We are NQATpod on Instagram, Ed's at NQATpod on Twitter, and we are under our real names on Facebook at No Question About That.
Yeah, so we started off. Let's talk about Cavani then, because this one seems done and dusted. A lot of mixed feeling on the internet, and I have mixed feelings too about this one, because I can, out of all other context about United's transfer dealings, I can almost get on board with the idea that an ageing, once outstanding number nine is coming to the club. And you'd say, okay, you know, backup for Martial, we haven't had that, different option. A bit more physical. It's going to be an awful lot of games this season in Champions League. You know, he's had to play Champions League.
Yeah.
You know, I can rationalise this one. What I find hard to rationalise is the fact that he's going to earn more than all the other forwards. And he'll be 34 in December or February. No, it's somewhere around then, in the winter. Anyway. And it's a 2-year contract or 1+1 or whatever it is. And they're paying £10 million in agents' fees, as well as the huge wages, it seems, although we haven't had confirmation of that. I don't think we'll get it in the financial call. All of that kind of tips it over the edge. Plus, then you look at his data from the last 18 months where he spent a lot of time injured or on the bench, and he hasn't really done anything of particular note at all.
Yeah. I think the money side of it, we really should be taking with a massive pinch of salt, because we talked a little bit about journalists, and I think, I mean, the thing that I think we know as a collective is that most of the conversation around United from reputable journalists comes from journalists that have good contacts with agents who deal with United. So I think that it's the players and the agent side where all the information comes from. And the only information that comes from United are these kind of, well, I was going to say controlled leaks, but more like drunken 11 PM emails to the journos that are on the distribution list, right? So I think a lot of the numbers that we hear after these deals are coming from the side where it serves their interests to make it sound like the numbers are really big, right? It's coming from the agents' camps, the players' camps. That's where all the details coming from. It's like, so I would take with a pinch of salt some of the numbers that are being bandied around, you know, around Cavani. But never mind how much we're paying for this aging superstar who, even at his best, was an amazing, amazing player on his day, but, you know, had plenty of off days as well, even when he was at his absolute peak. I've seen Cavani be devastatingly brilliant, incredibly intelligent footballer. Like, his link-up play with Suarez in the Uruguayan national team in, was it the last World Cup or the one before? I can't even remember, but it was absolutely amazing. He's a great player, or he certainly was a great player, but he's been available all summer.
Yeah, and that's the context in which this is happening, right? So you can only rationalise it without that context. So, yes, exactly. We don't have to get too hung up on the money, although I imagine that it is pretty high, and we'll see whether that has some ripples. And because he was looking to match his PSG wages, which are 20-something million a year. But yeah, he's been available all summer. So he could have sorted this out ages ago, could have done pre-season, and could have been with the club from the start of the season.
Yeah.
As it is, he's been at home in Uruguay. He won't be fit for another 6 weeks.
It's like the Daily Blint signing. Remember the Daily Blint signing, when you were like, Daily Blint was not Manchester United's first choice target. He was the guy that they had on retainer in case they couldn't get other deals over the line, which is more or less what Van Gaal has said repeatedly since, and that, you know, the first choice targets were the best of the best of the best, and we ended up with Daily Blint, who, you know, I like Daily Blint, but he's never, ever been the best of the best of the best. And it was a transfer that was done in a day. And you wonder, like, Cavani's just been on the back burner of like, well, if everything else goes disastrously wrong all summer, at least we can spend a fortune on Cavani. Yeah. And you know, the difference between him and Sanchez is obviously they're not mortgaging the future of the club to him, because it's at worst a 2-year deal. Sure. So, you know, it's a huge, it sounds like a huge amount of money for what we're getting, but
the money is, you know, again, there's context with money, because why should fans care? I suppose we should care because it's all coming out of the same pot. And the more he gets, the less will be available for other players that could strengthen the squad. So we've got to ask ourselves, is he going to contribute enough for it to be justified? And you know, I don't know what the number is, but it was enough to put Juve off, who were very close to signing him earlier in the summer. He's been waiting around all summer for some suckers to come up. Maybe you said maybe he was on the back burner. It's probably we were on the back burner. If nothing else happens, there's always Woodward.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, of course, maybe also he has kind of brought that amount down because he's like, well, I'd rather earn 10 million gross a year than nothing net or whatever. But, you know, the other reason that we should care about the money, the only real main reason to care about the money, I think, is especially given that, like you've said, it seems like United are low on cash rather than their overall financial position is a disaster. So having a bit more of an outlay, especially we've got some wages off the books this summer, But the main reason is squad harmony. We've got Alexis Sanchez off the books this summer. I guess we're probably still paying some of his wages, or it probably cost us some money to get him off the books or whatever. I mean, Diogo Dalot's gone on loan for a year with no fee arranged afterwards. So he'll be back. And Andres Pereira.
As Smalling may not go because they're... For some... Well, you know, with Smalling, I can kind of see the point that why shouldn't United get the best fee possible, because every other club tries that with us. It's just when he sat in the squad not playing all season, if they don't sell him, his wages are an opportunity cost. Right? So we will be paying those wages. And with Darmian, who's kept for 2 years, and Marcos Rocco, I think it's now 4 years that we've kept him without selling him.
We gave Phil Jones a massive new... What a stupid club. Anyway, the Cavani deal, the thing about the money is the squad harmony. That's the absolute key thing, because if he has a detrimental effect on that, then that's major issue.
He has to perform. He has to add some value.
Yeah.
He really does, because if he's someone who comes off the bench now and again and gets a goal in a Carabao Cup tie, a bit like Odion Ighalo, who we're still paying 100 grand a week to, until January at least, then and he's earning more than the rest of the forwards who are perhaps not playing in all of the games, or I don't know, he's been promised some Champions League games and Anthony Martial's on the bench, could happen, right? And his development stalls as a result, then I don't know. We'll see whether it was worth it or not, but it could have a negative impact. We'll see. I hope it's the former. I hope this is... He adds something. He has an extra bow to United's attacking options. He has another forward, because I actually do think a number nine's not bad to have in the squad. Another one.
I agree.
Although, does reduce the number of chances that Mason might have in that position.
But I think that the thing is, we need attacking options, and Odion Ighalo had a lovely couple of months, and that's just done. It's donezo, and so you know. And he'll be going in January. You said January at least. I don't think the at least was necessary there. I don't think anyone's going to be extending his stay at the club. And yeah, you're right. Like Mason might not get chances at number nine this season. But then given that there's no options on the right wing still, I mean, they're still talking about Sancho. Who knows? He wasn't in the squad.
If United pull 120 million euros out of Edward Wood's behind... on Monday night, we'll do a special pod. It'll be a 5-minute pod, but we'll do a special one. But I think there's zero chance you have to be on the bat phone tomorrow, Paul, or today as everyone is listening to this, because it's not going to happen.
I don't know. I think if they sell Smalling for 30 million, they might just like up the fee to whatever Borussia's actual number is, if it's you know 10 million less than they're saying or whatever, and you know, and if the teams are only, if they're only like 10-15 million apart rather than like the 30 million it looks like they're apart, then maybe, you know,
United appear to be penny pinching over 3 million euros with Alex Telles.
I mean, you know, who knows. There's a lot of briefing and counter briefing going on out there, isn't there? Anyway, I guess from where we were 48 hours ago, the fact that we're going to make a couple of signings is probably good. I mean, Telles is not going to come in and fix the back four. The manager's got a massive job on his hands.
Telles' strength is going forward. I mean, clearly looking at the numbers, that's it. Everyone's favourite, Fabrizio Romano, says a 5-year contract, which is interesting for a 28-year-old.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There we go. Here we go. So that's transfers. They're sort of like... I mean, I think this has got to be... Assuming we don't get Sancho, this is one of United's worst windows ever. They've bought backup for their two best players, and they've bought an attacking left back and backup for their third best player, and not addressed any of their areas of weakness except for, well, one area of weakness.
Yeah, I mean, the left back, and we'll see with this guy. They haven't bought a left-sided defender. or another central defender, because that is a hot mess. They haven't got the right-sided or wide attacking player, because we've got a lot of players who like playing central. So for balance, that's a problem. I don't know. It is short. And then you've got an awful lot of players who aren't really part of the plan, but Ollie has been talking up this week, which I assume mean people like Lingard and Mata, and he's been saying they've looked really good. I've seen something fresh in them. You know,
hey. Player of the month, Juan Mata. Didn't play in the league, got United's player of the month from
two Carabao Cup games. Yeah.
Oh, captain, my Carabao captain.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ollie has been like the tone of Ollie's press conferences and comments to the press has switched from being we need players to it's all strong enough, you know, we've got players here, I've seen something new in them. And then he covered himself in absolute disgrace by saying that we've got good people at the top, and just I mean, even for the staunchest Ollie supporter, and I think I'd have put you in that category before you flip-flopped.
Why do you always... I hate this. This really does my head in this, by the way. A person changing their mind based on fresh evidence should not be called flip-flopping in 21st century society, where people ignore the evidence of their eyes and hold on to their pre-existing position like their life depends on it. Like, new evidence...
All right, flippy, flop.
Yeah. You touched a nerve by being part of the problem, Ed.
Anyway... Even the staunchest Ollie supporter, they'd be very hard to defend that kind of comment. And he wasn't far off. There's nay value in the market. It wasn't far off, that kind of defending of the hierarchy. And everyone can see through it.
I think it's fascinating that you characterise my position as being one of the staunchest Ollie supporters, by the way, as well. Like, I desperately, desperately, desperately wanted him to do well. But I think that... makes me a Man United fan of a certain age. Like, yes. that's I don't think I was alone in that. And I've had tremendous hope in him, possibly more hope than a lot of United fans would have had. But for a long time, especially since some of the stuff about the decisions that he made while he was in charge of Mulder, I've found it like uncomfortable to be a staunch Ole supporter. So yeah, I don't think that's a fair categorization.
Well, we'll see where we are after the disaster of the transfer window and a tough-looking autumn schedule. Poch has been sitting on his hands for a year now. So, I mean, we know where we get to. Club finishes in Champions League football, doesn't back the manager. It all goes a bit south. Club sacks the manager.
Oh, not before. I mean, this is a running joke, of course, and it literally happened. I mean, hilariously, the MEN ran a story that was like, director of football still a possibility for Manchester United. And it's like, they think we're stupid. And we should talk about this too, because it's something that's around in the ether. This relationship with the supporters and this kind of like Woodward's hired private security, maybe this is all not true, but apparently hired extra security. Cause I mean, I guess it's understandable given what's happened in the past, but like attacking Gary.
What did happen in the past?
People visited his house.
No, I know. But it wasn't half blown up into, you know, so what actually happened was someone tipped off the Sun to go and get some very nice, pretty HDR shots of a couple of guys holding flares.
I mean, people threw flares someone into the lob family into home his, he lived in.
Yeah, like, no, I know, and he's selling
well,
it
the
or whatever.
Of
but
the home.
But you know, does anyone actually believe Ed Woodward's life's in danger here? Do we actually believe that?
I think there are maniacs. In the world, I definitely think there are maniacs in the world and an increasing number. So I don't think it's completely, I don't think it's a massive likelihood or whatever. But anyway, whatever about that, he's also
I get a couple
like,
of people on Twitter a week after I've said, I don't know, Wan-Bissaka can't cross a ball going, I'm going to kill you. I know where your children live, you know?
Yeah.
Which is also where I live, but you know. Hey.
The thing about Gary Neville that the club are apparently unhappy that Gary Neville has been saying incendiary things. It was very funny. Somebody shared a screenshot of like Gary Neville likes this tweet. the news roundup tweet about the club not being happy with him. Like, you know, I mean, he of course hasn't said anything about his pal because they never say anything about their pals, but you know, the ownership is the problem. But I think Woodward's personal incompetence is arguably the single biggest problem now, especially if you think like, okay, yeah, we're spending way less money than we would be spending if the Glazers weren't in charge. And it's an absolutely disgusting disgrace that they were allowed to carpetbag the club. They've taken 1.7 billion out of the club. Love United, hate Glazer should be a badge of honour, not a weirdo pro Mourinho cult. That problem is probably smaller on the scale than Ed Woodward's personal incompetence at this point, I would say, because with what resources there are, United could have had an infinitely better transfer window than they have had if they were being better run, not better owned, not given access to more money, but just better managed.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, yes. Same money and a competent director of football, technical director, which every other, I see Monchi was in the doing an interview this week saying he can't believe a club of Manchester United's stature hasn't got a director of football. That's a come and get me plea if I've ever seen one. But yeah, every other elite European club basically has this position and United don't. And Ed Woodward has shown himself to be incompetent at this time and time again. And even with them patting themselves on the back with the last few transfers, they paid so much for Bruno that Sporting put a press release out to brag about it. They paid, I mean, there was a missing decimal point in the amount they paid for Harry Maguire. And Wan-Bissaka has got a lot to learn still. You know, he may have a higher ceiling, but he's got a lot to learn for £55 million.
And they bought
and Daniel
Bruno.
James is awful. Sorry, nice yeah. kid, but he's championship level.
Yeah, and they bought Bruno fully one transfer window later than they should have done. So, so that's what they get for the way they handle their transfer business. I've got the telly on behind me and Villa are somehow 1-0 up against Liverpool after like 2 minutes, which probably means Liverpool are going to win 6-1 at this point. But Ross Barkley has just missed an absolute sitter for his new club against his original club's arch rivals. And that can't feel good, can it? Anyway, talking of not feeling good, I guess that's probably the end of the podcast. Is there anything more we should say? I mean, okay, let's say we get Sancho. Let's say that somehow we get Sancho. And this window, we've signed Cavani, Sancho, Telles and Donny van der Beek. Like, it's still not a good transfer window?
No, because it could have all have been done six weeks ago, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And given the club momentum going into the season. And still won't have fixed the central defensive problem, which is a hot mess as well. And probably the central defensive midfield problem, which is also a mess.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess we want it all. And there's at that point, you could say, OK, can't do everything. But still, I don't think Sancho is coming. I don't think that's going to happen. I'd be really surprised. You're all listening to this some mid-morning on Monday, probably. Or that's when it'll have come out, or you may be listening to it after the window's closed at midnight on Monday and he's signed. And Ed Woodward will be there. We won't be seeing his eating grin because he'll be wearing a mask only over the bottom half of his face, not his nose, which is the wrong way to do it.
No, he had a lot of full face mask today.
Fourth official
Ashton's had a word.
Blowing his nose all over our manager. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, I don't expect. I think Telles is probably it, but we'll see.
So United next play on the 17th of October against Newcastle away. We're not going to have a podcast before that unless some absolute wild stuff goes down. I mean, if we sign Sancho, I'm not doing a special podcast just for that.
£120 million player.
He's not. He's, can he play centre back? No.
You did one for Robin Van Persie.
If we sign prime, only because we happened to be in the same room, one of two podcasts, and we didn't even put that on the main podcast feed, by the way, just put it on a, hosted it and put it out on Twitter. One of two podcasts we've ever done in the same room. Ed hates it. but then if we sign peak Rio Ferdinand and N'Golo Kante, then and only then will we do a special one for these. Oh God, I can't believe I just said the word special one today of all days. Newcastle, who actually like played really well against Burnley, and Alisson Maximin is an utter joy. But anyway.
Yeah, Callum Wilson scoring goals. Yeah. Well, that's the warm-up to a really, really tough run of games, which could go very pear-shaped. So, fun and games. But first, we've got the absolutely pointless international window. In the middle of a global pandemic where you really don't want bubbles mixing, we're going to mix a bunch of leagues together and fly everyone around on, you know, commercial aircraft in most cases. And it's going to be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I really don't understand why this is happening. Oh, wait a minute. Of course, yes, I do understand why this is happening. Because money, that's why. All right, that'll do. Actually, money and power, right? Because it might even be more about power than it is about money, because the international federations are terrified of losing their grip on the game at this point.
Yeah, I don't even know what games are happening. Is this Nations League or is this World Cup qualifying?
Who knows? What even is any of this anymore? Yeah. We lost 6-1 to Jose Mourinho's Tottenham Hotspur. I couldn't be more depressed about that. A great day for our enemies, Ed. But we will lick our wounds. I'm not talking about United. God knows what will happen with them. But me and Ed, we'll lick our wounds. We'll come back stronger. We'll live to fight another day. And whatever Ole Solskjaer's flaws are, I still wouldn't swap him for the manager that's just beaten us 6-1. So there's that.
Yes, enjoy it. We'll see you after the international break.
Take care, folks.
Bye now.
Oh, yeah, Patreon backers, stay tuned for football chat. Nobody's going to want to listen to more football. Anyway, if somehow you want to listen to us talk about other football, we're going to do that right now. Everyone else, we'll see. Oh, we've had a bunch of new Patreon backers as well, so massive thank. I guess we should talk to them in the bit that's about to... I'm going now. Bye, everyone.